From the Next Tier studio of WISR, I'm Pat Parker reporting for your local news. More local news on our website, butlerradio.com, and on Alexa devices with the Butler Radio News Skill. Tracy Morgan is in the air chair next. She'll be doing the It's Your Turn program.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey for It's Your Turn in for another segment. Actually, in for a couple of days, so we'll be together again for another couple of days while Dave is out. For a program note, what we're going to do today is we're going to be talking to one of the wineries that will be coming to the Butler County Wine Fest. It is the 12th year that we have held this, and this will be at the Butler Days Inn. If you want to get your tickets, you can do that early. That is always a good thing to do. The Butler County Wine Fest is on January 27th this year at the Butler Days Inn. And there are going to be 11 different Pennsylvania wineries, food samples, specialty vendors, and a basket raffle that benefits the YMCA's annual support campaign. We do have details on our website. If you just want to get the tickets and call us, you're more than welcome to do that. You can stop in. So whatever way is good for you, if you want to buy them online, you can do that as well. Two different sessions as always. This year you'll have 2 to 5 or you're going to have 6 to 9. So one of those two sessions you can choose from. So again, butlerradio.com or WISR680.com WineFest. And that's where you can get your detailed information. So big lead up to us telling you that in a few minutes, in about a half hour or so, we'll talk to one of the wineries that will be coming to that wine fest, some of their specialty wines, and just talk about their winery. Then, after that segment, we are about 1:15 or so, we're going to be talking to some exchange students that have come into the country. Well, I can't say exchange students because a great family here in Butler, they have a lot of exchange students come in and come through their doors, if you will. But one individual that is going to be with us in a little bit is actually an individual who is from Kosovo that this family met. And then when she was able to come to the United States, then they were able to offer their home for a place to stay. We'll tell you how that wraps into her story. So we have a young lady from Kosovo, and we will have a young lady from Japan. And those two ladies will be in, and the family will be in with us. That's going to happen at about 1:15 this afternoon. So what I wanted to do first is I'm sitting down with Drs. Gallagher and Simperman. Dr. Agnes Gallagher, Health by Nature Nutrition. Dr. Larry Simperman is with Middlesex Chiropractic Center. And they have the office on Route 8. So if you're going Route 8 south and you've passed Dinner Bell Road, they're going to be on the right-hand side before you get to Route 228. So what I wanted to do today is have them in to talk about how to read labels. I will be honest with you. We've had some reasons that we've decided to really start reading labels, finding out what's in food, and trying to eat healthier. And so we've been doing that. And I'll tell you, I'll look good standing in that grocery store looking at that label. I can tell you I have no clue of what I'm looking at. I have none. I mean, these labels are so long. And then you have words that are just, in my opinion, enormous that I'm going, I have to have an app on my phone to figure out what that even says. So we're going to be talking about food labels today. Do we know what they say? Do we know what's on the label? How to read the label? So let's do this. Let's talk about how to read labels. Dr. Simperman, Dr. Gallagher, welcome to the program. Now, we have talked before, typically on the morning show that I host, Let's Talk, So talk about what you do, who you are, in case this is the first time folks have heard your name.
Sure. Our practice is mostly dealing with nutrition and clinical nutrition, which is helping people to overcome health issues through the use of, the use of nutrition, homeopathics, herbal, omics, herbs, in order to balance their body so that they can heal. Okay, whether it's just from something very simple, like maybe a toe fungus, I know that sounds terrible, but something like that, through, something more serious, like we have patients that come in that need support during chemotherapy, and so we're helping them to keep their nutrition in while they're going through some, major problems in their life. So we range through that. We're working with people who want to, lose weight. People who want to use nutrition and good nutrition and dietary programs to lose weight. We're working with people who have cholesterol issues or high blood pressure to get their bodies back to where they need to be, via using supplements and nutrients, because the body needs nutrients to repair. And if it's missing nutrients, eventually you're going to wind up with a health condition. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to balance the nutrition that's missing, support organ health, and get a person to where they need to be so that their body can actually do the healing, because our bodies were made to heal. So that's our premise. We know that our body was made to heal. If you have a cut, it's going to heal, right? If you break a bone, it's going to heal. And the healing time is dependent on your personal amount of nutrients that you have and, your immune system and things of that sort. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to supplement that and get the body back to where it should be.
So a lot of times people will come into you and just say, I don't feel well. My doctor says I'm fine, but
yes,
I just don't feel well.
Exactly. Same thing with, like even bone health or, I thought about that because last week I must have had four or five ladies that had problems with, bone, like osteoporosis or osteopenia. And of course, they were choosing not to do medicine. And there's lots of ways to build bone, no matter if you're 50 or 80. So we've been working with those types of people, too. But, yes.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting when you say that you deal with, in layman's terms, supplements would be, one term that I understand.
Right.
And even though you're getting the right mix of supplements, if you will, into someone's body, if they're choosing to take that, of course. But what about the things we're putting in our body that's not so great? And I know you go down a nutrition path, and that's why I wanted you in here today.
Yeah.
Because when I'm talking about labels, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Right.
Am I typical?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the big things that we do. We're trying to educate the patient so that they can go out and make a good choice in their diet. And label reading is extremely important. And teaching people to label read from the time they're little in school, health classes should be focusing on that so people can, have better nutrition in their diet, and they don't. And then when you go to look at a label, most of the time it's very confusing because the way it's set up in grams, and we are not a gram society. We don't work in the metric system unless you're a scientist. So when somebody goes to look at that, they have no idea. What they're looking at.
Is that changing? Will it change?
No.
I mean, why hasn't it changed
No.
from grams to something?
Because that's how they measure the food when they decide. Like, in other words, how do you get that label to begin with?
Okay.
So they go ahead and they have different methods of analyzing the food to find out what the nutrient content is, whether it's the macronutrients, which are like your carbohydrates, your fat, and your protein, or the micronutrients, which are your vitamins and minerals, okay? So they have different methods of doing that, and part of it is all scientific, so it's all done in the metric system, which is how science works. They never convert it for the label. The FDA doesn't require conversion. So that's the big part to begin with. You look at that label, and even myself, I was trained as a scientist prior to becoming a clinical nutritionist and a chiropractor, and I still have to go back and use a calculator to convert. And
but so, even if I could convert it, which I'm glad you said that, because I'm like, yay, I can use a calculator.
Yeah, you can. It's pretty easy.
But even if I could do that, and I'm just not a math whiz, so I can't say I wouldn't be able to. I just can't do it off the top of my head. If I were to be able to do that, and let's say something on a label would equal like 10 tablespoons of sugar, okay?
Right.
So I don't even know what that means, okay,
right.
So yay, it's 10 grams of sugar or 10 tablespoons of sugar, but how much am I supposed to have and not supposed to have of just sugar?
Well, anything that's added sugar to a box food is probably not good. So I would say none. Zero. Do not have any because...
Took out half my dinner there, yeah. But that's all right.
So because, all right, when you go to buy a boxed food, you know it's processed. So that's the number one thing. So that's a problem in itself. So you're going to probably have more sugar than you really want. That's pretty much known. So if you're looking at, I've talked about this before, the 4 grams of sugar equals about 1 teaspoon of sugar, right?
Okay.
So think about if you put 1 teaspoon of sugar in a coffee or a tea, it's pretty, well, for me, it's sickeningly sweet because I don't eat sugar. But for somebody else, that's still, they're going to taste it. If you put 4 of those in there, put 10 teaspoons of sugar in your cup of coffee. What is that? That's like syrup sugar, right? Syrup coffee.
But you're talking just coffee, but then there's the coffee, then there's the breads, which we've talked about
right.
before.
And I'm just using that.
Yeah, but then you go into cereal, and then you go into right. fruits right. that, you know, so right. it just keeps piling up over
right.
there.
Right. So there. Anyway, just getting back to the sugar content, mm-hmm. if somebody was going to try to keep their sugar under control and not eat a lot of sugar, I always tell them they have to stay under 8 grams of sugar a day or 6 grams of sugar a day. So they have that helps them to read their label. So say, for instance, I have a lot of patients coming in. They're totally changing their lifestyle, their diet. They're not going to do it overnight. So we have to work gradually. And getting rid of the sugar is then the first thing. So reading the labels, getting them to be able to see how much is in the sugar, and then looking at the serving size, because people ignore the serving size. I can tell you that. They don't look to see that a half a cup or two-thirds of a cup of something is what that label is telling you is in that two-thirds or half a cup or whatever it might be. So most people are ignoring the serving size, and they think they could have, you know, whatever, how much they yeah. want, and they're only going to get 5 grams of sugar.
So let me ask you this, because I have a couple of labels in front of me, and I'm not going to reveal brands. That's not the point of it. It's just to kind of look at a label. But my first question is this, because, yeah, we can talk about sugars. We can talk about fats. But then there's cholesterol. Then there's potassium. And then there's the calories. Then you're talking serving size. What am I supposed to pay attention to the most that I say, oh, do I reduce my calories, or is it the carbohydrates that are bad, or, you know, it's just kind of one big mess of information to me.
Well, again, you go back to your serving size. So when you go to your serving size and you look at that label, it's going to tell you what the calorie content is. So you have to decide, do you want to invest into that food? Do you want to, you know, take up 400 calories or 500 or 1,000 calories out of your, you know, just for that one serving, okay? So I have some information in front of me for a new label that the FDA is going to implement as of 2018, and the calories are going to be in more larger, they're going to focus more on the calories and the vitamins and minerals, which they used to do before. So the calories are going to be really big and large. So the one label that I have in front of me, it says, you know, there's 8 servings for the container. So that's one thing you want to look at too. What are you getting for your money? How many servings are in there? Then the next thing you're going to look at on the one particular label I'm looking at says 2/3 of a cup. And 2/3 of a cup, there's 230 calories in that. So a person can see that. Well, if you're basing your diet on a, you know, a 1,800 or 2,000 calorie per day, then you know there's 230 calories if I have a half a cup of this ice cream. This is basically for an ice cream. Then I could have that. You know, is it good for you? Probably not, but it's just, you know, you're having 230 calories. So if you're basing your dietary on that, then it goes on to show us basically, you know, how many carbohydrates are in that, right? And then carbohydrates are broken down. So there's, you know, this particular one has 37 carbohydrates. It tells you the fiber. It tells you the sugar. And then it also tells you the added sugar. So basically, for instance, in ice cream, milk has natural milk sugar in it. So once it's broken down, you're going to get sugar in milk because milk has lactose
in
it.
So then let me ask you this, because if we're calculating sugars, do we calculate the added sugars only, or are we calculating the natural sugars?
Everything is counted, and that's what that total carbohydrate is. And then the label will break it down. Where are those carbs coming from? Are they coming from fiber? Are they coming from added sugar? Are they coming from the food itself? Has sugar in it, naturally occurring sugar, which is the only kind you should really eat, is anything that's naturally occurring in the food. So it shows you that now on the new label by the end of 2018, these new labels will be on food. So this has started back in 2014. It's the first big label change since 1994. So it's huge. but it'll help people to see it, but the grams are still there, sorry. And they'll have some percentages, so it'll show you, like, this is 30% of your diet, this is 15% of your diet. So if you're trying to eat, say, a low-fat diet, which I don't necessarily recommend, it'll show you the fat's only 10% of this food. You're only getting 10%. So if you want to have 30% overall for your diet, then you could do 10% at each meal.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
so if you're trying to keep a, you know, like I'm going to do 30% fat and 40% carbs and 30% protein, whatever you're going to do, it helps you to manage your diet better. Most people aren't even that aware.
Yeah.
They're not looking at that. They're just looking at the box, which is marketing. Okay. So that box, the FDA allows that box to say a lot of things that are misleading when you go to buy food.
And you know what? I'm going to go through a label or two here with the ingredients, because that's what I think a lot of people look at, if mm-hmm. they're even looking, and then we don't understand that. But first, folks, if you're just joining us this afternoon, I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave, of course, and Dr. Agnes Gallagher here, Health by Nature Nutrition. Dr. Larry Simperman is here as well. He's with the Middlesex Chiropractic Center, so two ends of their business, but they're on Route 8. If you have any questions about this, how do we get a hold of you? What's your phone number?
It's 724-586-9777.
Okay, so here are a couple. Again, I'm not going to name the brands. I will tell you the one that I have in front of me is a cereal. And so, again, I'm looking good looking at this label. Couldn't tell you what these things are. So that's why I'm going to ask you, what are the things that I'm going to mention off of this that you like or you don't like, that you just cringe at? Either way. So this has whole grain oats. You have marshmallows, which I can already see your face cringing at marshmallows. But then it says cornstarch and corn syrup and dextrose. And I'm going to jump down here to, we'll just say there's a bunch of yellows with numbers, blues, ones, reds, 40s, things like that. Artificial flavor, what is that? Because I can see that on labels that aren't even on, you know. So, I mean, that's only halfway through, and I don't know what I'm asking you.
So, artificial flavors or even natural flavoring, when that's on a label, and it's usually one of towards the last or the bottom part of that, unless it's really loaded up, can be 15 different ingredients that you have no idea what it is. The FDA allows these 15 ingredients into food, which we don't know. So, when people have allergies, it could be things that you could be allergic to and don't know. It could be dyes and coloring. It could be MSG. It could be any kind of thing that they deem as a sort of like a spice or something like that. So 15 almost like proprietary blending ingredients that they can put in there that is specific to that, whatever the cereal or, you know, whatever food you're buying in that box. Now, going back to the front of that label, the first part of that label, of course, the whole wheat, you know, fine, that I have no problem with that. But then after that, it's four different kinds of sugar. That's a lot of sugar. So basically, you're buying a little bit of wheat with a lot of sugar. And the ingredients are going to be in the order of importance of how much is in that. So, of course, it's mostly wheat, because you wouldn't have anything if you just had sugar, right? You would just have a pile of sugar in the box. But you have wheat that's coated with every kind of sugar you can imagine. And then if you continue to go on maybe towards the bottom of that label, I'm not looking at it, but I'm just from label reading over the course of my lifetime, they spray in vitamins on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought you were going to go to the preserve freshness, and I was wondering about how do we preserve the freshness. But, yes, then it lists vitamins and minerals and goes through a whole list of them.
And those are sprayed on, like they're like coming through the conveyor belt.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, because the grain has been processed.
Yeah, they process
and all that's been refined and removed, so they have to put it back in.
So they spray it back in.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They spray vitamins.
Okay, all right.
Like synthetically made, you know.
So that doesn't really count into where I'm looking at the label that you have the percentages of your A's,
yeah, because
C's,
they took
D's.
That off, and they're going to take more and more of that off. Like, in other words, that's the new thing in the 2018 label, is I think they're only going to have, they'll have cholesterol, they'll have potassium and sodium, and they have vitamin D, but everything, they're taking off the A and the C, they're taking off a lot of mineral. You don't have to provide the mineral or vitamin content, except for the few things that I mentioned. So they're doing away with that, so a person is really not going to know what the heck's in my food as far as my vitamins and minerals.
So. Well, let me ask you another one, because I do want to ask you about the Preserve for Freshness. I have a whole different cereal label in front of me. A lot of the stuff disappears, like the dyes, mm-hmm. the colors and the yellows and the blues, and those aren't good, I assume.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so all of that is out of this other cereal, but it still says, I couldn't even ask to tell you what they were, but it says added to freshness. Or added mm-hmm. to preserve freshness. If you're preserving something for freshness, is that good or not good?
No.
Okay,
no.
That's not good.
Yeah. So things like BHT and BHA, those are all chemical preservatives that, you know, are chemicals that you're putting into your body. So is it, I mean, you have to figure out, is that worth eating that food? If it's something you don't know what it is, you don't know the word, do you want to
eat it? Or you can't pronounce the word.
Or you can't pronounce it, then don't eat it. You know, that's the key. You know, and anything that has, like, you know, you had given me another label for a, you know, it was like a sundae or something.
Yeah, something syrup.
And it had, like,
yeah.
the first ingredient was maltodextrin. So anything that's like, that's sugar, and mannitol syrup is an alcohol sugar. Sorbitol is going to be, you know, another chemical sugar. So anything that's, you know, sugar, and then it goes on, there's more and more.
Yeah, preservatives.
And preservatives,
yeah,
exactly.
Sweeteners and
yeah, it's just something that, you know, you're just putting your body under stress eating that.
Let me ask you one more thing, because I know we only have about 10 minutes left with you, and I want to get to the good things.
Okay.
There are good foods to eat. I don't
okay.
want to go around it.
Okay.
But, well, actually, two real quick. High fructose corn syrup, we see a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've seen a lot of bread that will indicate, sometimes they don't indicate this, and I don't know why, because I've looked for the unbleached versus the bleached bread.
Right.
So those two, if you could talk about those.
Well, the bleached is going to mean they use chlorine to bleach the flour.
To make it white.
Yeah. So that's...
So that's a simple, that's
yeah.
the process of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then high fructose corn syrup, what is that?
That's bad news for you.
Yeah.
And it's, that's probably the worst sweetener that you can ingest, possibly.
Yeah.
You know,
it causes
with
a fatty liver.
Yeah, the way that it has to be metabolized in your body is very hard on your liver.
And so that's why you're saying it's probably one of the worst things. It's
yes.
because your body doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah,
it
has a really hard time, and so then it just kind of accumulates in your liver, and
yep.
it contributes to fatty liver disease and diabetes and obesity. And so that if you look at most labels, you know, most regular foods, you're going to find tons of the high fructose corn syrup in there.
It's really cheap, and that's
yeah.
why they, you know, yeah. that's why they use it. It's cheap and it's very sweet, and
mm-hmm.
so they use it instead of cane sugar, and for economic reasons.
Yeah.
Even though the health side of, you know, the deleterious health effects of it, you know, don't seem to be a concern.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the reasons I wanted to do this also with the reading labels, and I'm still not an expert obviously at it, is I've tried to change some of my food.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been trying to look for the healthier options. So there are healthier options out
yeah,
there.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what's good. What can we look for?
Well, first of all, when you go to buy something in a box, you definitely want to look at the sugar content, right, which we talked about earlier. But you also want to look at things that only have 5 ingredients or less. So when you look at the ingredients, you want to make sure there's 5 ingredients or less. That's my goal for anybody buying something in a box. Usually the 5 ingredients or less, you're not going to get the artificial colors, preservatives, added, sprayed on vitamins. You may still have some sugar in there, but you're going to have more pure ingredients and less junk. And so if you're going to spend your money on food, I always tell people don't buy counterfeit food. Buy real food. So, I mean, we all have to, you know, you buy a box of crackers or something of that sort. You know, like, we're all going to do that around the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to buy a box of crackers or a loaf of bread. And so you just really want to look for things that have the less amount of ingredients with no added sugars, if possible, and also no added colorings, preservatives, things of that sort.
And I am a person that I can tell everybody listening that those things are out there at whatever store you want to go to.
Yeah.
I mean, I should say most stores. I can't guarantee, but
no.
the stores that I've gone to, I go to plenty of different stores,
right.
you know, so I'm not going to name any particular,
right.
but I've found, like, we'll say chocolate syrup. I found the chocolate syrup that you're talking about that has all these ingredients I can't say,
mm-hmm.
and then I find the chocolate syrup right next to it that has the 5
yes.
ingredients or less.
Yes.
And so it is more of a natural, I guess. Yes, sugars, I know.
No, but, that's going to have sugar, and that's fine because you're buying that because you want the flavor.
Yeah.
But you don't want all the extra stuff that you don't really want or need.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, you know, fine, you want to put chocolate syrup on something, buy something that doesn't have a lot of the other stuff in it. You know, you're still going to have the sugar, so you have to monitor that, but you're not going to have all the rest of the junk, the high fructose corn syrup and the colors and dyes and, you know, preservatives to preserve the whole darn mess. And then I always want to talk a little bit about, you know, I just brought up crackers. You know, crackers have so many bad oils that have heavy metals, that are processed with heavy metals, and that affects our bodies tremendously. So people have a tendency to go for all those packaged goods that have that, and that's really detrimental to your health. It destroys the blood vessels. It causes, you know, inflammation in the blood vessels, which then tells your body to make more cholesterol, which raises the cholesterol levels and causes people to have heart disease, and it's just not a good practice. So I tell people to avoid that.
When you're saying avoid crackers, also, is that one of those products that you can get at, because I've gone to health food stores, I've gone to particular stores that are just all organic type stores, and they have crackers as well. So, I mean, are there good choices out there?
There's not very many good choices.
Okay.
You may be able to find some made with extra virgin olive oil, but in general, that's a junk food, you know.
Okay.
And so people, even chips and even natural stuff. I mean, there's natural junk food. We always laugh about that. You can go into any, like, really expensive, you know, stores, grocery stores. And I'm not going to name the names either. But people probably know what I'm talking about. And you're going to find expensive junk food that still has all the bad oils. It has the canola oil. They have prepared foods with all full of canola oil, which is the worst thing for you. It clogs up all your arteries. So, you know, that's, you know, it's like a farce. So you're going to pay all this expensive money for junk food. You could just probably...
What are the good oils?
Oh, olive oil, coconut oil. You have a list of all...
Yeah, avocado oil, butter, ghee, peanut oil.
Peanut oil.
Real butter. I've heard you say that before.
Real butter.
Real
butter. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to stay away from the hydrogenated oils.
Even sometimes they have organic oils that will... still be processed, so you have to be careful of that.
Be careful. They read the labels.
Yeah, anything that's heated is going to have a heavy metal. So, you know, again, we went through all the different oils: walnut oil, hemp oil, fish oil, flax oil. Any nut oil, so you can cook with any of those.
One more question, non-oil related. Last question for you: when we see 99% fat free, is it fat free? What's going on with the fat-free label?
Well, they took it out. They took it out.
Okay.
Do you think you need that fat? Yes. If nature made the fat, you probably need the fat.
Well, then let me ask you this. I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question. When you talk about that, I've heard, so correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to go back to milk for a second. When you get whole milk, the natural fat that's in whole milk makes you feel fuller and can be beneficial. Yes? No? True?
True. Yeah. True.
Okay.
True.
Okay.
I mean, that's supposed to be there. You're just supposed to limit what you do with it.
Not drink the whole gallon.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Now, why would you want a food that's more processed and have things taken out of it? You know, as far as, you know, gaining weight from that, low-fat foods make people gain weight more because then there's more sugar in the lower fat.
Or more carbohydrates that are going to turn to sugar once you eat them.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not the milk. Maybe it's the pizza that I'm eating with the milk.
Yeah. Or the cereal.
Or the cereal with the milk. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what's the point of that? It's like, you know.
Yeah.
It really doesn't make sense.
Well, I think that's the thing with the labels. You know, if you're concerned about your weight, you have to look at the carbohydrates in there as well as the sugars, because those carbs are going to be turned to sugar once you eat them.
And if you don't use them, right? I mean, carbs are okay if you use them?
Well, yeah, but you only need a certain amount of them, really, every day. So,
And,
you know, there are better choices for carbs than bread and cereal.
Hopefully we'll see more people just staring at boxes when we walk in the stores.
Yes, maybe they might be confused, but at least they can get started looking at some of the things we spoke about today.
And wondering, you know, what is in my food. So Dr. Simperman Gallagher, thank you so much. Again, real quick with your phone number.
724-586-9777.
That's Middlesex Chiropractic Center, Health by Nature Nutrition. So thank you both for coming in and talking about that. Nice
You're
to
welcome.
Have you.
You're welcome.
All right. We will be back here in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a short break and then switch gears altogether, talking about the wine festival and then talking about the young ladies that have come in, one as an exchange student and the other visiting a family right here in the Butler County area, talking about their experiences in the United States. We'll be back right after this. I'm Tracy Morgan with It's Your Turn, in for Dave Malarkey.
Shipping things yourself can be extremely complex. You buy the box, you make sure it's secure, and then you gotta tape it, then lug it into the car, to the post office. Ugh. Make life easier. Take it to Go and Postal. In between Villa Grande and Kings on Newcastle Road, Go and Postal takes care of all of that for you. And hey, they've got Valentine's Day cards as well, local honey, and lottery tickets. It's just a downright good place to go. Go and Postal, 140 Shockey Lane in Butler, if you got to plug it into the GPS, your friendly neighborhood shipping store.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey. I just want to take a moment to talk about our great friends at St. Vincent de Paul. Every day, a sale at St. Vincent de Paul, the thrift store at the Greater Butler Mart. Store hours are between 9 and 7 p.m. Listen to this, 50% off of different clothing, Monday, Senior Day, Kids Day on Tuesday, Ladies Day Wednesday, Upscale Day. So 50% off on different clothing on those particular days. On Thursdays with the Upscale Day, you got 10% off furniture that's been on the floor for at least 10 days. Friday, you got Men's Day, back to that 50% off again. You got clothes, shoes, specials on electronics on Men's Day as well. Saturday, you got the sale tag of the week. So if you have a buck, you can go get some clothes. You got the sale tag rack, only 99 cents. You also have the offer of buy one, get the second item for 49 cents. At St. Vincent de Paul, every day is sale day. Again, store hours at the Greater Butler Mart between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Welcome back to the program. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey, and it's your turn. So we have the wine festival that's coming up, January 27th. Can you believe this is the 12th annual wine festival in Butler County? 12 years, man. Felt like we blinked and it, well, we did blink and it went all by. But we're going to continue this, and we continue it this year on January 27th. Butler Days Inn. Just like the past few years, you'll have two sessions that you could choose from. You'll have 2 to 5. You also have 6 to 9 p.m. And the tickets are on sale now. Now, if you want the premier ticket and you want to save yourself some money, you can do that. The cost is $20 pre-sale, limited quantities available for that. You can also get tickets at the door for $25 if the tickets are not sold out. So you'll want to get these tickets and pick them up early. 724-283-1500 is our office number, so you can always call at any time, and you can get your tickets if you'd like to do it that way. You can always visit butlerradio.com, WISR680.com, information there. But this is going to be on January 27th. Now, we have a lot of different specialty businesses that will be a part of this. You have great wine, and we're going to be talking to some of the wineries as we go through the next couple of weeks. Greenhouse Winery with me right now, Greg Hazuza. Tell me about Greenhouse Winery first.
Oh, Greenhouse Winery. Well, we've been in business for 11 years now. We started off just by making wine as a hobby, and the hobby turned into a business and just grew out of control for us. We now have 4 different locations. We have our main winery in Rilton, it's in Swickley Township, very close to Irwin. That winery, we have where we do all our entertaining. We have a patio out back where we do live bands and live entertaining. We also have a banquet room that we can rent out for showers or private parties, or what any occasion that you have. We also do a lot of events in that banquet room in the winter months. We have bands playing. We have comedy nights. We do spa days for the ladies. Anything you can imagine. We've done dinner theaters. We do a lot of entertaining in the winter months in that banquet hall. On our website, you would find a schedule of events that we do throughout the winter months and actually all year round. We're constantly updating and changing it, and always something going on at our place up there.
Greg, when you say that you have, it was kind of like an experiment, and then it's gone into a great business. Do you have your own vineyard, or where do you get your grapes from?
No, I don't have a vineyard. I don't grow grapes. Where I'm located is not a good location to try to grow grapes commercially. So what I do is I contract with a vineyard up in Erie to grow grapes for me. They grow them, they pick them, they crush them, and they send me the grape juice. So I start with the juice, and I ferment it into wine. I filter it out, age it, cold stabilize it, blend it, sweeten it, and bottle it. So it's all my product from the grape juice onward is all, made by me.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was always curious when you see wineries in this area and you hear a lot about exactly what you said, you need a prime location to grow the grapes. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But then how do you get your flavors? Is that a trial and error, or who gave you the ideas for your different flavors?
Our different blends, we just came up with the blends by sitting around a kitchen table and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, sitting around with Cindy or with friends, and it's all pretty much flying by the seat of our pants kind of thing. And it was a lot of fun doing. We had to make sure that we wrote down the recipes as we went, because by the end of the night, we would forget what we started with, maybe because of the alcohol we were consuming. But most of our blends are just made on the kitchen table, really.
So do you have a unique blend that you offer year-round, and do you have a unique blend that's offered only a certain time of the year?
Yeah, we have both. Our Hoe in a Garden wine is our top seller all year-round. It's our most popular wine. It's a sweet blend. We make... probably this year we're going to make probably 3,000 gallons of that particular wine alone. What's unique about it, it's a good tasting wine, but also the labels that Cindy has designed and put on the bottles are very cute and very attention grabbing. The cute name, Hoe in a Garden, and the cute labels really sell the wine. We do make four other blends, Dan Good, Trampin' Weeds, and April Showers. They're all equally popular and cute labels as well. And in the winter months, we do a blend that we call Greenhouse Cheer. It's an apple and grape blend, spiced wine, and it's very popular. We sell out of it every year throughout the holidays. So, our blends are very popular.
Do you help people with pairing food and wine? Because I think that's where, at least I can speak for myself, where I lack the most about wine is knowing when do you serve red wine, and when do you serve white wine, and when do you serve the sweets? Do you help people with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have, we've had wine dinners up again in the banquet hall up there in the main winery, where I've talked about the wines and pairing them with food. As far as red with red meat and white with fish or chicken, a little more detailed than that. But we do that quite often. As far as the food and wine pairings, it's always a popular thing to do.
So I was at a location, a banquet type scenario, and they brought out white wine. They brought out red wine. One was cold, mm-hmm. One was room temperature. And I asked, why is it that way? And they said, because. So now that I have an expert, can I ask you, why
because.
Is it like
well,
that?
Well, that's my answer as well. No, typically red wines are served at room temperature because it brings out more of the tannins and the acids of the wine when it comes to red wines. White wines, they chill white wines typically. That brings out the more fruitiness of the wines when it's cold. And that's typically why. And probably tradition as well.
Yeah, it's a long-standing tradition that it's served like that, that I'm aware of. Yeah. And let me ask you this, too. Does the glass make a difference? Because I see now white wine glasses, red wine glasses, and then you just see these, like, goblets. So I don't know. You know, does it matter? Does it change the taste?
The shape of the glass matters when it comes to when you swirl the wine in the glass and you're bringing the aroma or the bouquet up into your nostrils to smell it. A fluted glass for red wine is usually a big bowl, and it kind of flutes up to the top, and that concentrates the aromas at the top of the glass. White wines, typically, you don't need to smell the nuances of a white wine, and so those are normally more of an open top glass. But it's, you know, any glass will do. You know, that doesn't have to be a special glass for red and a special glass for white. Any glass would really do for that.
Greg Azusa, Greenhouse Winery. Of course, you're joining us for our wine fest that's going to be at the Butler Days Inn. And so tell us what you'll be bringing with you. Do you have a lineup yet, or are you going to surprise us a little bit?
I know we'll bring our standards for sure. Hoe in a Garden, Tramp in the Weeds, Diamond. I believe we'll be bringing Dan Good, probably Chamberson. Standards at Niagara and Concord, we'll probably have those as well. We may bring some surprise fruit wines. We haven't decided what fruit wines we're going to bring yet, but we'll keep them as a surprise. You'll have to come to our booth to find them.
Do you have a lot of people return? Because this is our 12th year of holding this particular wine festival. Do you have a lot of people come back for a specific wine?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, every year they come back looking for, our Red Hot Diamond, which we will be bringing. Red Hot Diamond is a sweet diamond wine that we put a cayenne pepper in each bottle, and that makes the wine hot. So that's a staple that we take to every festival, and people come back for it year after year. Typically, when we do a festival, by the end of the day, the word is out across the whole festival, and people were coming saying, "I got to try it. I got to try it."
Do they say, "I need the hot wine"?
Yes.
Or the hot stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, we want that hot wine. Yeah, and we generally always sell out of it, no matter how much we take.
Well, Greg, Greenhouse Winery, of course, we will see you at the Butler Days Inn, and it's only a couple weeks away. So, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's the Butler County Wine Festival, the 12th annual wine festival at the Butler Days Inn, January 27th. Great wine, an elegant atmosphere, specialty businesses on hand, and of course the wineries, Greenhouse Winery being one. Again, special thanks to Greg for just joining us there for a few minutes. Two different sessions you can choose from. You have 2 to 5 and you have 6 to 9. So those are your two sessions. Choose from one of those. Pre-sale tickets on sale now, $20 for pre-sale, $25 at the door if they're not sold out. 724-283-1500 is our number if you have any questions. Of course, details also online. We will be back right after this with It's Your Turn. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Butler Ambulance Service not only serves the largest portion of Butler County for 911 ambulance response, but they also offer CPR and first aid training classes and are a leader in wheelchair van assistance too. Butler Assist Coach, a division of Butler Ambulance, provides county residents with medical and non-medical wheelchair van transportation for general doctor visits, shopping, or even transportation to an event. To learn more, visit butlerambulance.com or to schedule a transport, call 724-283-4385. Butler Ambulance Service. Care you can count on. Welcome back to It's Your Turn. I'm Tracy Morgan, of course, sitting in for Dave Malarkey. And this is going to be an exciting hour because I know that we had a conversation early in our time together with an individual from Butler, and she now lives in London. And it was just a fabulous conversation just to hear the travels. We're kind of going in reverse. So now what we're doing is we're going to be talking to two ladies this hour. That one has been an exchange student, the other is actually from Kosovo, and an interesting meeting that has brought her to a family to visit right here in the Butler area. So what we're going to do today is welcome in three guests, because Tom Grant is here, and he's the dad of the house. Can we just say it that way, Tom?
That sounds good.
Nice to see you, Tom.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing in these lovely two ladies. We have Uriah Hiroyama. And she is from Tokyo, Japan. Welcome.
Thank you.
It is nice to see you. And also we have Anissa Mohajiri, and she is from Kosovo. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
It is nice to see you both. Tom, I want to start with you, though, because I'm interested in how your perspective is when you have individuals coming into your home and staying with you, visiting with you from out of the country. What kind of experience has that been for you?
Well, it's just great to learn about other cultures and see things from a different pair of eyes. Not only can they teach us about their country, but they have a better, they have a different perspective maybe of the United States, and that's always very helpful.
And how long have you been doing this?
Well, I was a teacher for 35 years, and I organized maybe five exchange programs at my high school in eastern Pennsylvania, and two of them were very long-lasting. They both involved Japanese schools, and one was a program where this Japanese student stayed a year at our high school. The other was an exchange which lasted for about a month, and the one program lasted maybe 25 years or so, and the second one is it's 41 years now that it's that it's been going on. So that's my experience. And then when I joined Rotary and found out that they have a very, very active exchange program, I wanted to get involved in that and help out. So,
is a month long enough? It seems like to really get a feel of what's happening,
a year is much, much better. Yeah, even a year is not enough, particularly when you visit a country like Japan.
And so I'm going to ask these ladies their stories, but we'll get back to you, Tom.
Sure.
So thank you for that introduction. And you're in Zeele in Opal.
Correct.
So even though we say the Butler area, you're down in Zeele. And you and your wife, Maria, have been so gracious in hosting these students. Urara, I want to start with you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And tell me about your journey here to Butler. How did you make it here? How was it chosen that you got Butler, Pennsylvania?
Okay, I had no choice for the place to go. So I was an exchange student through Rotary, and Rotary decided me to come U.S. I couldn't choose the country.
Oh, okay.
Or any, places in the country. So
how does that run in Japan? What's the process? Is it, does everyone go and experience the world, or do you put your name into some kind of system that you are in the running for that?
Yes. I was actually the only one in my high school to become exchange student. I took tests to become lottery exchange student in Japan, and I took several tests to become exchange students there. And when I passed it, they let me to pick few countries that I really want to go, but I couldn't.
The ultimate choice is theirs.
Yeah.
But you got a few choices that you could
mm-hmm.
put an X by the box and say, I would like to do this.
So, United States was my first choice, but they picked Zirinopol and.
And, Tom, do you know how that's done in a system like that where the student would have options, and it's the country that decides not only the United States, but Butler, Pennsylvania, or Butler County, Zeele and Opal.
Or Zeele and Opal, yes.
Yeah.
Based on the Rotary clubs around the world that have agreed to host an exchange student, that's the first step. So then you have this whole list of options for students to choose from.
Okay. Yeah. So, Yara, was this the first travel outside of your home country?
No.
No. Okay. So, was this the first travel to the United States?
No.
No. Okay. So, you had experience. You were ready.
Yeah.
Was this the first visit to Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes on that. All right. So, what was your feel when you got to Pennsylvania versus the other places that you visited?
Okay. I have been Disney World 3 times with my family, and I've been New York with my family before I came here, and I thought United States, like my image of United States was different than what I experienced in a whole year staying here, because I thought people eat hamburgers and pizzas all the time, and
I just had, like those.
Yeah.
Yeah, not every meal.
Yeah, and I just have like, I don't know, like they,
it's a different,
I thought they are more
yeah.
fat and
yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because yeah. and that's why I love the perception or I want to learn about the perceptions
right.
of others, because we are definitely not New York. You know, it's not big
yeah.
big city. Even Pittsburgh nearby is not nearly as big as Pittsburgh. Mm. But you do have a lot of people who like to go to the gym, but you do have a lot of people who like to sit on the couch. So that's, you know, it's an interesting dynamic here. And was that a shock to you, or how did you take in the differences whenever you got here?
Well,
an adjustment, a learning curve?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you about the education, because mm-hmm. that's a hot topic in our country, obviously, mm-hmm. on are we keeping up with the rest of the world? Are we behind? When you got here, mm-hmm. did you feel that, and I'm talking about generally the United States, are okay. we behind? Or are we keeping up? I mean, where were you at the level of education when you got here?
You could be honest.
Yeah, you could be honest, yeah.
I don't think, so I was 10th grade.
Okay.
When I got here, but I was in senior because the school system was, you know, my school took me as senior. So I was a senior student, but I was only 16 years old.
So in your country, you were 10th grade. When you got here to visit,
yeah,
you would be put in the senior high as a
yeah.
senior. Interesting.
But so I took most of the classes with junior and senior students, and but I think math, and especially math and science, was not very difficult for me.
Okay.
So I had mm-hmm. all straight A's, like at the test, for a whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, I studied a lot during my exchange year, but I also got a good grade, so I think education in here is not very behind from other countries, but also it's not very difficult.
It's not,
it's
sure.
not very high.
Sure. So let me ask you what was new, if those were, I say natural to you, you're already educated in those fields. What was a learning curve for you when you got here? I'm just wondering what the differences are in the country for an exchange student from Japan to come here and go, huh, I've never knew that. I never knew how to do that.
That's an interesting question. Well, everything is just different. And, like, I don't know how to take school buses. Like, we don't have school buses in Japan.
Okay.
I don't know how to get school lunch at cafeteria, because we don't have cafeteria in
don't
Japan.
You? What do you
yeah.
have, or what do you do?
We bring lunch box to school every day, and we eat at classroom, so we don't use cafeteria or anything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just everything is just different, and yeah.
And how about activities around here? We're used to having the ski slope, so snow skiing is natural for some of us. We learn that.
Mm-hmm.
Water skiing is something we do.
Mm-hmm.
We watch endless football because that's just what we do. I mean, how about activities? What did you get to experience once you came to Zelenople? Because there's a lot to experience and travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom, do you remember her experiencing anything new?
Well, you don't have sports teams the way we do.
Oh, yeah.
You don't spend all that time on sports and other activities.
That's true. Yeah.
Do you have extracurricular activities? Like, I mean, so Tom, you would know what I'm asking here in the way of our extracurricular activities are the sports.
Right, yes.
Or music.
Right.
Or theater. The arts. So what is it that you would do outside of your classroom?
In Japan?
Mm-hmm. In Japan.
Mm-hmm. For high school student in Japan, it's like taking tests for university is the biggest part for high school students in Japan. So we go to after school called cram school, and we study there. Like, we studied extra
so it's
hours.
A lot of education, a lot
so
of
So we don't really have any activities like sports activities like in here after like to do in after school.
Yeah,
we do.
So was it hard for you when you came here? And right now you're just visiting, so you're not an exchange student at this point. You're visiting. Have you graduated from school in Japan? Are you still? But you're still
educated. Not, but yeah.
So when you came here and you were an exchange student, you stayed for a year. Is that about the time frame? You were here for about one school year.
Yeah.
And then you went back to Japan. Was there anything that was hard to get adjusted to when you went home? Or did you feel more like, okay, I can sigh and breathe because I'm now in my familiar surroundings?
Well, I experienced the reverse culture shock. Like, so I feel like I grew up more than my friends.
Okay.
And like sometimes I feel like I'm much older than them because, I don't know, because I spend too much time in here and I just feel really comfortable in the United States and I couldn't really, it's hard for me to get in there and back to my place that I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Most exchange students who come to the U.S. is sort of a year off, year to relax, experience things. Japanese students have a different they have a different experience with that.
Okay.
Her school in Japan gave her work to do while she was here. So on top of the work she had assigned at Seneca Valley High School, she had work assigned from her school. High school is a really intense time for Japanese, particularly those going to universities.
Yeah.
It's work really, really hard. They have to pass. You have a series of tests you have to pass to get in. But I was talking to Yurata about this the other day, and once you get into the university, then the pressure's off. You can relax.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
you can relax.
Relax. You've made it. Now you can relax more. Yeah.
So now, when, in a sense, if you've made it into the university, is there still a bit of pressure on what you graduate in or grades, or is it?
Not so much.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard for Japanese students to get in the university, but it's easy to get out. I think it's different from...
And that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, I think it's easier
yeah.
to get in
yes.
and harder for us to get out.
I think
especially
that's different.
With good grades.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Yeah. I want to ask you one more thing, and then I'll give you some time to breathe, and we'll get our next guest in here. But... So let me ask you about the cultural differences, because, and I will say this sincerely, my nervousness, I would love to travel the world. I would love to come to Japan. I think that would be great. My nervousness is I don't know enough about the culture that I would offend someone in some way. And so do you have to have a bit of training before you come over here, or how do you educate people here on your world in Japan? And I'll give you an example just in our country. I'm from this area. I went down to our southern states in South Carolina, and from there's just different dialect. Like I would say yes sir, yes ma'am. It's just something that happens quite often. I picked that up and it became a part of my vocabulary. I came back home and people didn't think I was from here. And so it was an odd reality that I thought, oh, I've just spent time in a different place. and I've picked up some of what they do there, which was fine. But when I came back to my place that I knew very well, it was just odd to have to kind of shift a little bit. Does that happen, or did that happen for you when you came over to the United States and then went back home?
Yeah, it did. I mean, like my I think I changed some way that, I don't know, I changed my food,
eating
habits, and I changed, my fashion changed, and I speak English most of the time in US, and I didn't speak Japanese for a whole year, and I forgot some, so I lost my Japanese. So, you know, some way we changed when we lived in one place for a long time, like a year. And it's sometimes it's hard for people who knew me for, you know, years before I came here, and they were like, you know, you changed.
Not who we knew.
Yeah.
So do you have, Tom?
I want to ask Urano a question.
Okay.
When you were over here, it was very informal. You called us Tom and Marie.
Mm-hmm.
You were on, the relations with teachers were very informal.
Yeah.
If you met other adults, such as coming to Rotary, mm-hmm. you often spoke to them with first names. But when you went back to Japan, was it difficult adjusting back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's rude in Japan to speak them in very...
casual
way.
Okay.
Yeah. Like calling them in a first name. It's, yeah.
No.
No.
And is there an age where that starts, or is that even for the youth as well?
Yes.
Even for the youth as well. Interesting. It's just very intriguing to me because it's just a different way to live. And I love that. Let me give you a break for a couple of minutes. If you're just joining us, I'm Tracy Morgan and sitting in for Dave Malarkey today for It's Your Turn. And we're talking to, I can't quite say two exchange students, but we're talking with a couple of individuals, young people who came over with Tom and Maria Grant, and they stayed in Zelianople. And Urara was a exchange student, and now she's visiting. And when do you go home?
I'm going home on February 7th.
Oh, okay. So you've had a nice time to visit, too. So that's good. So you can relax and then go back. And yes. But we also have Anissa Mohajiri, and she is from Kosovo. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Now, I'm interested in your story as well, because I'm used to seeing exchange students, and you come over and visit, and there's a process to that. Tell me your journey on how you came to meet the Grants.
I met the Grants when I was 15 years old, about 3 years ago now. And it was just an amazing experience because I wanted to move to the U.S. since I was 10, because education in my country, it's not good. And I wanted to get a better education so that maybe someday when I go back, I could help the community there. And they were a huge help, and they proposed programs, and basically, they did anything for me to come here. But finally, I found a way, and I applied to a prep school in Arizona, Southwestern Academy, and I got accepted, and I got a scholarship. So I was able to move there, and it was just an amazing experience.
And so you've graduated, or are you still in school?
No, I graduate in June.
In June!
Yeah.
So we're right up on top of that. Well, good. I'm glad for that. So, Tom, tell me your experience and how you met her.
Well, we had the Rotary Clubs in Western Pennsylvania, I think four clubs. We had an exchange program with a club in her hometown in Kosovo. And we hosted her uncle, actually, when that group came over here first. And then that was in June of 2015. July, we went to Kosovo, and we stayed with her uncle.
Okay.
And her uncle invited his brother and Inessa over to their house, and we had a long chat with her. And one afternoon, very impressed with her intelligence, and particularly with her English. It was very, very good. And we were hoping to arrange for her to come over as a Rotary Exchange student, for the whole year. But at that time, because Kosovo was a new country, we couldn't do that because there was no formal agreement between Kosovo Rotary Clubs and Rotary International. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't do that. So we were very happy to learn that she was going to be able to come over later.
And so once you came over, if you're in Arizona, did you get to visit off and on with the Grants, or did you stay with the Grants? How did that come about?
Since it's a prep school, I live on campus. And actually, they were one of the first people that I told that I was moving here, because it was just a really... I guess I just didn't get it at the time that I was actually moving here because everything happened so fast. So I messaged them and everything, and they were kind enough to let me come and stay with them for my winter break.
Oh, good. So, okay, so you had a place to stay. Yeah. See, that's nice to be able to go somewhere and know you have a friend in that, I say, area. Now, here's my question, because I don't have a map in front of me to be able to put Kosovo in, you know, the size of a state here in the States. But what was it like knowing that you're coming from a country the size of Kosovo to the United States, which is, it's quite big, quite large?
I always knew that it was going to be a really big change. And coming from a country which is not in most maps to the U.S., it's really different. And for a while, I have anxiety issues, and I'm not really social, and I'm really socially awkward when I first meet someone. So I thought that maybe making friends here was going to be the biggest change in me. And I kind of adjusted to that, and I got to see people with different cultures. And it just, it was amazing, because I got over my shyness.
Sure, sure. And you're doing well. I just met you a few minutes ago. You're doing great. And so what was the reaction of individuals when you're at the university? And I've been to a university. I went to college for four years.
I'm in high school still.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You went to high school. Then the question is still going to be the same, though. So what's the reaction of people whenever you meet new people and they realize you're not from this country? Are they welcoming? Are they I say accepting, but are they willing to help you along in learning different things?
Yeah, actually, when I moved here, I didn't expect people to be so welcoming and so nice. And it was just a really different thing because I come from a country where people might not be so welcoming to each other. They are pretty welcoming, but here they're extra welcoming in some sense, that everyone was so nice to me, and at the school everyone was so kind to actually help me adjust. So it was a really new experience.
And I want to ask you a little bit more about the perception. And again, I ask this seriously because I love learning from you and from folks that are not from the United States on the perception of us here in the United States. Did you feel that people wouldn't be so welcoming because of what you just mentioned, you know, where you were coming from? Mm-hmm. Or was there another perception that's out there in the world about people in the United States?
I don't know, actually. Because I'm a really shy person, I thought that maybe people wouldn't be welcoming to that. And maybe because I didn't talk a lot, people would think that I was being rude. And it's just that I was really shy to talk to people most of the time. So I was never the person to make the first move, and here I got to do that. And I got to talk to people and share with them my story and how I got here and what I did and my accomplishments and basically how I got here. So it was just, I don't know, it just people made me feel more secure here.
I want to ask you a couple of the same questions that you just heard me ask a few minutes ago. And one is about the activities. What is it in the way of activities do you do in Kosovo that's different than here, especially when you just mentioned that the education system may not be as advanced as you would like it to be?
The education system there, we don't really have extracurricular activities that are formed by the school. We go to school for 6 hours from 1 to 5:30, and it's just, it's very different. So I had to find a way to engage in other activities, something that really pulled me in. I'm really good at art, So I started taking art classes. I went to the music school. And finally, 3 years ago, I found a makerspace for technology. I learned how to program, how to 3D model. And just last year, me and my team, six teenagers, we were able to convert an engine combustion car into an electric car.
Oh, nice.
And it was my ticket out of my country. And basically just going to the makerspace kind of helped me be more open-minded and actually talk to people that were more like me, that were shy at first and then overcame their insecurities, and people who actually like technology and like programming, and they don't care if they're being judged by others, people who were bullied before, but now they just like to do their own thing.
They found their niche.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Explain what Makerspace is for those people who don't know or haven't heard of that.
Makerspace, it's a place where people of all ages can go to and use their equipment to basically bring their imagination to life. That's what I like to call it. Bon Evet, which means DIY, do it yourself. It has helped a lot of, not just teenagers, but I saw my little sister, 9-year-old sister, start programming, and it was really exciting. And she just sat on a computer and started writing a code. And it was amazing to see her do that. And it has helped just a lot of kids maybe not let their imagination die.
You know, since you mentioned technology, Urara, can I ask you about technology?
Okay.
And how early in your education system, excuse me, are you learning about technology? And I chuckle because where I'm at, we'll just say, not 20 years old anymore. I have two young boys at home, and my two kids will teach me about the technology that's in my hand. So how early is technology in your hands?
Well, I got my cell phone when I got into the elementary school, so that would be, I was 7 years old, I think.
And do you have any, we'll say, parental restrictions? And the reason I ask that is because in this country, there's that debate on when do kids get the electronics, and then how much should they be on it, and then how much should I restrict? So that kind of conversation, does that happen in
Japan?
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
okay.
We also had the same problems like they do in United States. So we have serious problems that kids are on the phones whole days, and they just addict on the phones. And
Yeah. And how about you in Kosovo? Is that an issue that's even addressed, or when do you get technology, or when's that debate?
I am a kid of technology, I guess, because my
dad... You're developing the technology.
Yeah, my dad worked with computers ever since I was a little kid, so I guess I saw what he did and pulled me into that kind of... I don't know, he just embraced it a lot. So I started working with it and maybe just turning on the computer and messaging my friends and stuff. And in school, our teachers don't engage into technology. We do have a technology class, but we don't learn about technology. Let's just say that.
Okay. So you have to learn about technology elsewhere than school. Okay.
So what I learned is basically from me doing research. And then going to Bon Evet, which really helped me because I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't actually know. And it was just amazing that my parents weren't as, I guess, strict about technology. Maybe other parents are in Kosovo because they don't embrace technology as much. But because I worked with it and I wasn't home most of the day, I was more into programming and being on my phone a lot. So
when you came to the United States, was it it would be a whole different world, obviously.
Yeah.
So was it full of opportunities, or was it a matter of confusion, or again, the cultural shift that we were just talking about there, like in Japan, was there a lot to learn? What was your feeling when you came? Or yes to all the above.
Yeah. I guess when I was back home, I never fit in. So I was looking for a place where I could maybe be myself and not get judged for that. So when I decided to come here, I was kind of pulled into this new environment that I started playing a lot more video games than I did before. And I never got judged that I hang out with different people now. And I guess me being me, it's a new normal here.
Okay. So, now, you had mentioned that when you got the scholarship, when you got to come here, it was an opportunity for you to be able to learn so you could give back to your country. Do you have goals set in your mind of what that looks like, or are you just taking it one step at a time?
The answer is both. Okay. I am a feminist.
Okay.
So I like helping women, and hopefully I get to do that when I go back this summer. I want to volunteer with different organizations to actually help women that are being abused or they're in poor circumstances. And because my country is a really poor country, so why not help women with that? And hopefully I get to do that when I go back home.
In Kosovo, are there less opportunities for women to advance compared to the United States?
Yeah, compared to the United States, yes. That kind of has started to change after the war with Serbia, but it's still bad more in the villages, I guess, of my country.
Do you see war in Kosovo, or have you been in that mix? I ask that because, and I can only speak for me, but I feel like the perception here in the United States is when we hear of certain countries, mm-hmm. we think there's war there all the time, every day. Are you in the midst of that?
The war ended in 1999.
See, and that's the perception I think the United States
has.
But we think certain areas. Like, Tom, do you think I'm on the right path there? Like, when we think the Middle East, we think war all the time. And I'm not sure that many of us here in the United States could right now point to a map without names on it and tell you the countries.
Yeah, I think that phase of their history is over for the time being. They fought a horrible, horrible war with Serbia and suffered greatly. But now they're engaged in trade with Serbia and so on. There's Serbs who live in Kosovo. Yeah. But they're really, as she was alluding to, the several different Kosovos. There's the rural area, very traditional, and there's a small core of people like the young people, men and women who came over to see us in 2015, 2016, who are looking to the future and trying to engage young people, young entrepreneurs to help develop Kosovo. And well, I would point out what we have here. Kosovo became independent in 2008. It's one of the newest countries in the world. Urara represents one of the oldest civilizations in the world.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what I was just writing down.
Okay, yeah.
It's the different dichotomy between the two areas that you come from.
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
How do you, and either one of you can answer this, but have you been in this kind of space altogether very often, or is this kind of a first for you? You two visiting together.
Well, I do have... We have Chinese students in my school, and that was really different, seeing how their culture is really old and mine is so young. I mean, Kosovo and Albania have been really old countries, but they were not really independent countries. Well, Albania has been for over 100 years and Kosovo for 10 years. So it was kind of really different to learn about that. Because I know my culture is also really old, but my country is really young.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's only 10 years old.
Yeah, and I think Japan goes back to a lot of tradition. Am I correct in that?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you share that with other individuals? What's your reaction?
Yes, Japan is a very old country, but we don't really... many Japanese young people don't really know about very old culture stuff. Like, we have traditional tea ceremony, we have traditional clothes, we have traditional stuff, but we don't really learn it and we don't really use it for daily lives in Japan right now. So I don't think it's different between like young country and old country, but yeah.
See, again, another perception that I think a lot of us, well, I can't speak for all of the United States, but I can speak for a lot of us, that we don't know enough and we don't educate ourselves enough about other cultures. That's why I'm glad you both are here. So let me ask you this. Are there things that you have brought to this country that you've educated people about that you've run into? And then my second question is, are there things that you could take from the United States that you can teach the folks that you know back home?
Well, for the first question, I don't know, honestly. And for the second question, I think that I'll take everything that I learned here and take it back home, because, as I said, Kosovo is a really young country, and seeing from how I was treated most of the time in school, it needs big change. And I think they can do a much better job as to fixing our educational system, and I do want to contribute to that. And also, we're told every single day that us, the youth of our country, were the future, but sometimes we're never even given a voice. So that's why most teenagers want to leave the country and get a better education somewhere else. And I want to make people feel secure there, that they don't have to leave the country to get a better education, because they have everything they can find there. And I don't want them to have the same story I had, to want to leave my parents and my sister back home just so that I could get a better education and have a better life and a better future. I want people to have that better future there.
Nice. How about you, Aurora?
Okay, I'm going to answer the first question that you asked. Okay, so when I first got here, the Zelenopo had a folk festival, and I got a booth to teach kids about origami, which is the paper craft. Mm-hmm. It's traditional paper craft in Japan. And I taught kids in Zelenopo how to fold origami. And I also did a couple of presentations at the Rotary Club while I was here. And I taught people about Japanese cultures and Japanese traditional clothes, traditional way of life and everything. And I think, I also taught my friends in high school about myself and also about Japanese culture. And I think the biggest thing I don't think I told them, but I think I gave them an idea about how Japanese people live and how Japanese people think was
And I think that's a great thing, because that's what I think you're both doing here, is just by telling your stories, mm-hmm. whether it's you consider it a testimony or just sharing your life or telling your story, whatever terminology you'd like to use, it educates not only me, it educates everyone listening. And I think that's a huge value, because even just sitting here, and I say it, three different worlds, but there's the United States, Japan, and Kosovo, three different locations on the map that just live very differently. And I think that is, it should be highly valued, because it's just intriguing to talk to everybody. Tom, how about your perspective in this? Are you going
I think we all need to recognize that prejudice is based on ignorance. It's not knowing about other people. And I think it's so important, particularly in these times in the United States, that people find ways of meeting other people and learning about them and finding out they're really not that different from one another. I know that we had an experience in Rotary several years ago when we hosted a group of Pakistanis who came to the U.S. And we had a program at our club in which the Pakistanis talked about their culture, about what they were doing. And after that meeting, we were sitting outside, Marie and I were sitting outside in our yard, and one of our oldest members came and stopped his car, got out of the car, walked over to us, and he said, "They're just like us." And that's what I've been trying to do most of my life, I think, to get people to find the common bonds among people rather than look for differences.
And I even think differences can be intriguing and fun and education. And again, I'll tell you about when I went down to South Carolina and I had a friend that he ironed his jeans. And I went, "You iron your jeans?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Do a lot of people you know do that?" He said, "Yes." He said, "That's just what we do." And
that's in our same Kosovo.
Is that what you, what's
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we do that in Kosovo.
You iron your jeans.
Yeah.
See, that's intriguing to me because I would never, I pull them out of the dryer and that's it. So that's interesting. Yeah. And so I think differences can be a lot of fun and just to learn about each other just as individuals and different countries and different ways of living. You know what, we're almost out of time, but I have to ask you this because I have to. The food. Did you like it when you came? Was it a big shock? I know you mentioned the hamburgers. Yeah. And so go ahead and you say, you talk first about the food, because even here, if somebody from another country has started up an authentic restaurant and they're cooking their authentic food, and sometimes we eat it, we're like, uh-uh. And then sometimes, you know, they'll eat our food and go, uh-uh. So I'm just wondering about the food. Did you like it? Did it take some getting used to?
I did like it most of the time. But I thought that I would never say this, but I actually miss the food back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to cook most of the food back home. And
I'll bet you'll learn now, won't you?
Yeah, I will. I have to. But I like the food here.
Yeah.
So.
Just different. How about you?
Well, I just want to say Japanese restaurant in here is not Japanese.
I've heard that. Thank you for saying that.
They don't serve Japanese food. They actually serve Chinese or Korean food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Describe what it's like then in a Japanese, Japanese restaurant, but in your hometown or in Japan, how's it differ?
Well, like, I want to say about sushi. So people in here think sushi is some kind of roll and vegetable roll and like, well, we don't eat vegetable roll in Japan.
Okay.
Sushi is the raw fish on the rice. It's sushi. And we don't put vegetables in there. No. That's not sushi.
No, no.
That's American sushi. Yeah.
And do you have one more dish you can think of? Just one more. Besides sushi, is there something I'm going to ask you, too, if there's a dish at home that you could describe to us that you're like, I love it, and yet we would never even think to make it here. You're right. You want to go first?
You can.
Okay. Anissa, do you have a dish at home that we would look and go, wow, I've never heard of that before? Or just a favorite dish of yours at home?
I guess my favorite dish would have to be the pies that we make there.
Okay.
Completely different from the pies in the U.S.
Okay.
Here, it's more like dessert. And there, it's one layer of dough, meat, dough, meat, dough. Or instead of meat, you can add spinach or potatoes or basically whatever you feel like adding to the dough. And then you bake it and it's amazing and I actually really miss it.
So now is that pie considered your dessert? Like
no.
Where we dessert, it's sweets and chocolate and or is it just part of your dinner?
That's a part of our dinner.
See, that's interesting because if we say pie, we mean dessert.
Well, the most important meal there, it's not dinner, it's lunch. And for dinner, we don't really have any special things cooked. And
interesting. Okay.
So that's basically our lunch. And our dessert, it's more like our snack after we eat. So our desserts are sweet.
Interesting. So. Okay. Well, I take it back. The only pie that we would say would be shepherd's pie.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be what I'm thinking of as you're describing that.
Kind of.
Yeah. But but different.
Yeah.
Altogether different.
Yeah.
How about you? Go ahead.
I'm trying to think the name that food. Do you know the food? Do you know the very famous dish at the Ichiban restaurant?
Ichiban. And I've been there, yes.
Like
the rice?
No, like people
They prepare the food in front of you?
Okay, oh, you mean, oh, yes, how they do it on the table?
Yeah,
in
we
front
don't
of
do
you?
That in Japan.
Okay.
That's the American way. And many American friends asked me about that food, and they said they love it. So they told me that's their
favorite. And you're internally
food.
Just
and
chuckling
I was like,
going.
No, that's not Japanese food. And I don't even know that's Chinese food or Korean food either. Like, I don't think that's.
It's a made-up U.S. thing, I think. Yeah. That's great, though. Yeah. That is fabulous. Well, thank you both for sharing. It's wonderful to meet you. I'm very impressed with both of you, and I wish you the best as you continue in your journey, whether it's here, home, you travel some more around the world. But thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Sharing. Thank you. It was nice meeting you.
Thank
and
you.
And Tom,
very,
thank you for bringing everybody
you're very
in.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Just a question for you is do you plan on keep on doing this with
Oh, yeah,
some
as
students?
Long as we can. Sure. Yes, we enjoy it.
Yeah.
Gives us great joy to do it.
They can enjoy Butler County, Zelianople.
Absolutely.
Take them to Pittsburgh.
Show them around.
That's right. Tom, thank you. And
thank
I
you.
Know Maria's over there. We'll give her a wave. But thank you all for coming in. And folks, thank you very much for joining us for this segment of It's Your Turn. And that actually wraps up our day together. So thank you very much for joining us. We will be back again tomorrow. I'm going to take the show once again for Dave tomorrow afternoon. But thanks for joining us. I'm Tracy Morgan with It's Your Turn.
Midday lottery numbers for today. The pick 2 is 62, 62. The pick 3, 390, 390. Pick 4.